Live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go. Adam Hill is across the way. Cofield and Company on a Wednesday. Hitting the road again tomorrow. We'll be out there at Circa Stadium Swim. We have a pretty big announcement to make on something they're going to be doing. So that's coming up. I got to tell you, there's so many good topics today. We've got plenty of food talk, so we'll hit some hot dog conversation, multiple big breast stories, big chest stories today. Fired up about that one.
Okay.
And are the Lakers actually in, like, bargain basement mode where they see Monty Williams get fired and you're like, oh, he's got all that money now from the Pistons. We can give him a low offer. Now we can afford him. That's pretty outrageous, but we'll get to that. I can barely speak. I saw a tweet on your account last night. I don't even know if you sent it over as a topic, but I saw it. I had it loaded up, ready to go this morning. I start building a rundown, and probably around 10:15, I had to run an errand, whether I wanted to or not. I was hyperventilating over your photo. I don't know what's happening right now. My head is spinning.
Well, Olive Garden wasn't open yet, though, right?
It's totally bizarre. Well, there's a lot in this conversation. So the picture you sent out was some person said, I'm treating myself, and it was a package of smaller size wieners, which is going to be important in this conversation, breadsticks from the OG. We won't give them 55 free pops here. And then we see a picture of a hot dog and what appears to be a bun. Has this been done before? Is this person an innovator? Is it something we missed out on that's a nationwide trend? I am thrown for a friggin' loop over this.
If it's not a thing, it is now.
It could be. And who's going to monetize it? Who's going to grade it? Of course we are here on Cofield and Company. Just to give you the money shot here, right? The meal is a hot dog put in an OG breadstick, a little stream of mustard, and that's it. This changes the game.
Yeah, I don't even think you need the mustard. I think the seasoning on the breadsticks is enough.
It is delicious.
Wow. I'm blown away. All night I couldn't even think of anything else.
You're having a tough time.
I had a lot of group texts going last night about, are we doing this? But how do you ideally you go into the OG and bring hot dogs with you that are cooked.
I know, that's tough.
Because you don't want to bring the breadsticks home and get them cold and reheating them, they're just not the same.
The authenticity of the OG breadstick when you take it home. I don't know if people order from there on the dashes and whatever the eats and all that stuff. I don't know how it turns out. I can't imagine.
Is there an OG
hot out of the oven breadsticks are going to maintain authenticity when you get them home?
Is there like an OG next to a hot dog spot in town somewhere?
I think there is a schnitzel near one of the OGs. The OG that we thinking, like, I personally like.
I was thinking more of a better hot dog spot.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What do you want, like a stand?
Or like a, yeah. Like,
I mean, you could probably. Again, I'm trying to avoid doing what the last show did with their bagel conversation. I'd like people to advertise with us. But there is a sub cheesesteak place right down the road from the OG location on Decatur. You could probably get a damn good hot dog out of that.
Well, here's the thing.
Someone has to run, get the breadsticks. Someone is down the way timing it perfectly to get the hot dogs.
Yeah.
And then you meet somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I think that's
the location.
To do it.
The area I'm looking at here would be like maybe. You could go to the parking lot of Arizona Charlie's and set up a 6-foot table.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, right around there.
We haven't thought about this at all, by the way.
The thing is,
sports.
I mean, the hot dog on the breadstick is brilliant, But why are we stopping? Like, it could be almost any sandwich, right?
I made a traditional hot dog roll today into a little ham and salami sandwich.
How could you? How could anybody eat a regular hot dog roll?
And it
right
actually
now?
Split. It actually split. I was in a hurry. And everything in my refrigerator is on a timer, so it all has to be eaten in order. It's all junk.
I'm going to say that I'll probably never have another hot dog roll again.
So what we're talking about is someone who's blown our mind. You know we love the hot dog eating contest. We're both fans of dogs in general. Someone used, I'll say it one more time, Olive Garden breadsticks as a hot dog roll. We'll send out the picture. It just looks beautiful. I teared up a little bit.
It's so snuggly in there, too. Like, it's perfectly just laid.
And, but it can't be a massive wiener. It has to be the little ones. Not like little, like, you know, the chili place in Cincinnati. So many free pops possible here. But a regular, like, wiener size, which is relatively small. Otherwise, it won't fit into a breadstick. But the breadstick is split nicely. I mean, it's beautiful. I've never imagined it.
I'm thinking, could you lay down some, like, from the fast food roast beef place? Could you just lay down some, like, roast beef in there?
Maybe.
I think that would be tremendous.
They're not big. Now, my idea was for the Italian joint, now that they see this and they're like, holy F, we
got to add it to
the
menu.
How do you add it?
Well, I think you just put it on the menu. Like, here we go.
You're going to serve Oscar Mayer wieners inside a breadstick.
Yeah.
Do you want to go with an Italian flair?
You want to throw like some gravy and some
no.
Mozzarella?
That's good pronunciation on the mozzarella. No, there's actually an Italian dog in Jersey. I think it's a place in Newark that came up with it. It's more of a North Jersey thing, a place called Buffs. It's their Italian dog. It's very simple. It's a high-quality hot dog with a good snap in it, but also with potatoes, onions, and peppers. Now, you'd have an Italian dog at an Italian joint, but then I think they would actually have to make bigger breadsticks. So how important is... Like, is that the perfect size of the breadstick? Could you make a bigger breadstick, stuff it a little more thoroughly with a couple of toppings, and still be good?
Well, I think you're doing too much. I think you're taking some of the flavor away from the breadstick at that point.
Right. Okay.
But I would just throw, like I said, just throw some sauce and some cheese on that.
So now you're going like a hot dog parmesan.
Yeah, but I mean,
are you serious?
I feel like we've got to jump on
hot dog parm.
We got to jump on the delivery right now.
Hot dog parm.
Can we have this delivered by like the 5 o'clock?
Can we have a restaurant open before them and just steal the recipe for the breadsticks?
Well, yeah, that's the key. You got to get the right breadsticks.
Whoever did this,
it
put
changed.
A watermark on your photo. First of all, you're an inventor of something unbelievable here. Someone is going to steal your recipe. Because
the
creativity with the bread on the hot dog has always been lacking. We found there's a place in town that sells kind of the old, maybe I'll call it old school, the split buns where the top is split with a little better quality. It's a brioche, but it doesn't.
It's not the same.
I know it's not. I know it's
you're,
not.
You're just not going to.
I know.
Because to me, it's like discovery of electricity, discovery of gravity, this. It's like the three great advancements in human history.
Don't make me cry, please.
You're not going to get like, there's another really good, but no. Mm-hmm. This is it. It's this. This is the thing.
Man, it looks good, doesn't it? You know, it's funny. It doesn't even look like a mini hot dog. I mean, somehow that breadstick really takes it takes up the whole thing. It's awesome. You know, along these lines, we never finished, and we'll come back on this. We never finished the other part of our hot dog conversation, the hot dog contest conversation on Monday. You hadn't been in for a while since the whole Chestnut thing blew up with the 4th of July contest and veggie dogs and sponsorships and appearance fees. And we broke it down a little bit. We talked about how the contest is going to be awesome, which, by the way, tomorrow we will be having on a champion of the hot dog eating contest. We'll be on the air with us in the middle of the show to get into all of these issues. This year's contest on the men's side is going to be very balanced, going to be very exciting. Over-under, I think, is very much in question. There could be any of like five or six guys who could win it. First to sixth or seventh could be a gap of like seven dogs. It's going to be incredible. We never talked about the other thing out of this, and that is we were told Griffin's the one who sent over, I'm blaming him. He sent over the link. Remember we got blown away one day. We're like, wait, Kobayashi announced his retirement? What do you think of this whole Kobe coming out of retirement on September 2nd to go against Chestnut on the new sports leader when it comes to sports television.
Yeah, Netflix. Yeah.
And by the way, this event is bigger than the Christmas Day games in the NFL.
Well, it's certainly bigger than like the, you know, the fights that they have on there.
This it's more important. Biggest. It's more important. Kobe, in terms of fights on Netflix, Kobayashi and Chestnut is more important than Jake Paul and Tyson if it ever happens.
Yeah, and Jake Paul, Logan Paul, which I guess Netflix wants to do now.
That's a good idea. If they don't pull punches and really go at it like brothers would.
That's interesting, but not as big as this. No. This is bigger than the Tom Brady roast or the live Love is Blind finale.
I still haven't seen any.
It's their biggest live event.
Right? I thought the how many have they done live? Love is Blind, just one?
I think just one.
I thought they had a lot of issues with it.
It was.
It just got crushed, right?
Yeah. It didn't go well. They struggled.
Well, it's all a tryout for the hot dog contest.
I think it is. Everything was getting ready for
perfect
this.
Perfect things, yes.
If Kobe is at his best, which is a question mark, he hasn't been pushed, and I think Chestnut is still going to be at a pretty high level. He's been doing the contest every year. He's been competing consistently with the hot dogs. But if Kobayashi is training and he's at his best, like, it's going to be tremendous. I just don't know. I don't know where he's at. And if he is, I'm very, very excited for this. If he's not, it'll be kind of disappointing. It'll be a bit of a letdown.
It's nostalgic.
But if he is...
nostalgic. It'll feel like Floyd and Pacquiao.
Yeah, if he's playing at a high level, then this is going to be awesome. It's going to be the sporting event of the year. I do think they should be using the OG breadstick buns. They would eat like 170. It'd be so delicious.
I mean, do you appreciate the quality of the breadstick and the seasoning if you're dunking in the water?
I don't think you do anymore.
So then overall hot dogs eaten would probably drop into the 20s.
No, I think it's going way up because it's just so good. You're just like, give me more.
I don't know. It's a tough eat. It's a real tough eat.
I would like to see them try.
I was on Eat Feats today.
Okay. It's your homepage, right?
I love it. There's so many eating events around the country, and I noticed as I was scanning down the list, I'm like, I think there's a hot dog eating contest in Reno. There's another one here, another one there. Like all like $1,000 prize, $500 prize. We have one in town. And we do want to do what we can to promote this. I'm going to effort us getting involved in it. It's called Weenies and Bikinis.
I'm intrigued by the title.
Okay, I'm just waiting for a reaction. $5,000 hot dog eating contest.
Are you getting in?
Well, that's an interesting question. Is this a contest that men can enter?
Oh, I didn't even put that together.
Weenies and bikinis.
I thought it was just like a hot dog eating contest and a swimsuit contest.
Oh, no.
Like separate things.
But you know what? I don't have all the rules. So these are good questions.
Yeah.
It's going to be, of course, at Stadium Swim, where we are tomorrow.
Okay.
So we'll be asking questions. It's on the 4th of July.
Wow.
In the evening, 5 to 7, bikini hot dog eating contest. That's all it says. 143-foot screen. Wow, they're going to put it on the big screen. Live DJ. Fireworks a little after the contest. And then, of course, six pools and cabanas. Those are great. But those are every day. Weenies and bikinis. 5K on the line. Start writing your questions down now.
Yeah, we've got to know some people that can get in this, right?
Who can get in it?
Yeah, we've got to know some people that could win.
Ooh, I didn't even thought of that part.
We've got to have a representative from, not from the building, but the building has to know somebody, has to compete for us.
I wonder if there's a cat. There's so many questions. I'm getting too fired up. I got to calm down. I mean, my first thought is, what if they have, what if they actually have celebrities, like celebrity eaters? Now, I don't mean celebrities, eaters who are celebrities. I think it might be the way to go. I have no idea if she wants an appearance fee. But wouldn't it be great in this contest to have one of, I'm not going to disrespect Mickey Sudo. She's formerly a local. She's a hometown hero.
Put Raina in?
Raina Wong, who is amazing in volume eating. I mean, I would assume that she's probably going to beat anyone, the traditional bikini contest or contestants. And the other one is Molly Schuyler, who I think, I don't know what she could do. 40? 50? I don't know. She's like a 7-time wing bowl champion in Philly. We're talking like 400-plus wings.
Yeah.
She's arguably the best female eater. We've been talking. I got all excited last year because we interviewed Skylar. Yeah, we interview competitive eaters all the time on the show. And we interviewed Raina Wong. And Raina's really big on social media. And I pitched it both of them. They're like, yeah, I'd be open to it. Like the big contest on the 4th of July. I assume they have not been called. I don't know if they're scheduled to go to one of the qualifiers. There's only a few left.
Yeah.
But what if Derek and company was like, let's have one of them on. Let's see what she can do.
I have to imagine.
Maybe she can outpace what happens in the morning in the women's field.
I have to imagine they're going to embrace the competition aspect of it more than the, you know, somebody putting up a big number and being unfair.
Are you suggesting the bikinis are the most important part of weenies and bikinis?
No, I'm suggesting, you know, we've talked about the 4th of July contest is now actually better without Chestnut.
You want an even contest?
I do.
You don't want a ringer in this thing?
I do. And actually, I'm going to tease this right now by just saying this. I'm working on a column that compares Joey Chestnut, Conor McGregor.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, just getting started here on this Wednesday. Adam Hill is in. Steve Cofield. Griffin is running the show. Lots of NBA news, at least being rumored. Because this is the time of year right after the finals that things will open up pretty soon. And one of the best times of year in the NBA goes down with free agency. I saw, I think it was Stephen A. Smith was lamenting, like, no break. Draft's coming up. Let's go. Which he can take off.
Sure.
But we don't have to pretend. Come on. Right? They're going to invent a couple of hard takes and not know what they're talking about, never having seen any of the players, and get misinformation. So let's not argue on that show over about the draft or argue over anything about, you know, about the draft. We've all covered college basketball, maybe not so much some of the international players, but we know what we're talking about. You don't. So we'll just send that salvo out there. Please stop. Now, what they can do on that show and what they should do, because you play the hits, is Bronny. I don't even know how you quantify this. Bronny, in terms of airtime on the Talking Head TV shows, and really it should be radio shows around the country, over like Klingon and Saar at the top of the draft, it should be like 100-fold. It might be 1,000-fold. No one outside of college basketball knows anything about Klingon from UConn.
Yeah.
And we're going to get to the whole notion that maybe the big man is back. This is a league of trends. And 7-footer Jokic is kind of changing how the league looks at trying to win a title. If you don't believe it goes through the Celtics and you believe it goes through the Nuggets, then you better have some good bigs. But the Bronny topic is going to be gigantic. Because the draft goes down without LeBron's future officially decided. And Rich Paul, agent, clutch, he's already working this. I think it's going to be fascinating how the NBA reacts to Bronny, LeBron's son. Basically, Camp Clutch is telling everyone, you're not allowed to work him out. And two, he wants a two-way contract, which is... He doesn't want a two-way contract. When you pick someone in the second round, of course you need a contract where you might get a cup of coffee here and there on the roster. But in all likelihood, if you're, whatever, 25 on down in the draft, you play on a two-way contract so you can play in the minor league. So you can play in the G League. Now I got to draft Bronny, and I got to keep him on the friggin' roster the whole time?
Yes, if you want him.
Whoa.
Now, the interesting thing about this is we are freaking out. I was freaking out. You're freaking out about it. Everybody's freaking out about, what are you doing? You're controlling where he's going. And Rich Paul said, you paid attention to my clients every single year? I do this every year. We only care because it's Bronny now? Like, he's fought against two-way contracts for every client.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and he's like, no, we don't do this.
Is there a track record?
We don't let them work out for teams that are in the first 15 picks of the second round. Not going to happen. You're not going to put my guy in a two-way contract. We're not going to do this.
Is there a track record of how his guys have performed in terms of where they're picked in the draft? Has he hurt some clients?
I'd like
to look into that, see if this plan always works well.
Yeah, I was thinking, I feel like the guy he did this with last ended up getting picked in the first round, and I don't even know who he is. So whatever that means. I mean, it worked, I guess, because he got in the first round. But yeah, this is Rich Paul's MO. It's what he's talking about. It's what he's saying. Now, there was a rule change a year and a half ago or so where you can't block medicals, because he was blocking medicals even. Like, oh, you're picking the top half of the second round? You're not getting medicals. We're not sending you anything. You're not finding out anything about our guy because you're not going there. That changed. You have to do that now. But yeah, this is what he does. He fights against two-way contracts, and we're like, you're doing this because you're trying to control where he goes. Yeah. Yes, that's what I do. I'm an agent, is Rich Paul's philosophy on this. So it's very interesting, and we'll find out where he ends up going. But they did let him work out with Phoenix because they're, you know, they're a first-round team, and hey, if you want to take him, if you want to draft him in the first round, go ahead. But we're not taking a second round deal that doesn't include staying on the roster for the entire year.
I thought this was fascinating from a content creator on Bronny. As you mentioned, Adam, he's had a workout, got a second workout scheduled for later this week. This person says Phoenix could trade back from 22 overall to secure additional assets and select Bronny. Do you think anyone in the league is going to cooperate with anyone who wants to pick Bronny James?
No.
Like, I'm going to help you out? No, you take him at 22, and there's a guaranteed contract, sucker.
Sucker.
Like, we're not helping.
Yeah, and then I think Rich Paul would be like, whoa, what? No, you're picking him where you're picking him. You're not trading back to pick him.
That too.
Like, no, that's not happening.
It would be fascinating, and I think there's a possibility here. If someone in the first 15 of the second round picks him, and it's like no two-way contracts, and then what happens? Rich Paul can't force Bronny to play in the NBA. Is there a time limit, or could the team be like, hey, okay, we're going to hold out too?
Well, that is the power that Bronny has of, I'm rich.
And I don't know what the rules are now in terms of going back to school. The deadline's passed.
Yeah, he can't go to school, but he could play somewhere else.
Could he petition? He'd go play internationally,
yeah.
Still make money,
yeah.
And be a draw?
Yeah.
Okay, we got something. This is going to be a pretty crazy follow as the draft's coming up in just a little bit. All right, on the way back, I want to get to, and we'll follow up on this, I want to get to one of the other big stories today. We got confirmation on a crazy incident, this crazy video that I think was very misreported at the time. Lots of updates on the dating life of Bill Belichick.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Caleb Herrick, Football Insider, coming up in just a few minutes. We'll get into all these reality shows coming up around the National Football League and also some intrigue around the UNLV quarterback position. Less than 10 minutes. Time for Cofield's quibble or query of the day. We had wondered what was going on with Bill Belichick back in November. A ring video leaked of Belichick shirtless, walking outside. I saw some people calling that a walk of shame. Like, he wasn't leaving. I mean, do I have to get this hardcore on walk of shame? Like, usually a walk of shame, isn't it? Like, you're leaving a residence, you're going home.
Yeah.
Like, he was going back in.
Yeah.
He's coming out. He's got the shirt off.
Like,
he's 72 years old.
Like, newspaper.
He doesn't give, you know, he doesn't care. He's proud of what he's got.
Didn't appear to be much shame.
No, not at all. I don't know how the intrigue here is how the ring video leaked, but as it turns out, it looks like he's dating this lady.
It not only looks like, they've been together like 3 years, it sounds like.
That was her house. Jordan Hudson.
Yeah.
24 years old. And you are right. I was confused on how long the relationship has gone on for. I saw reports of them meeting when she was like 21 and a half.
Yeah. Well, she's been in her job for 2 years.
Mm. What's her job?
It's a nonprofit. She's like executive director at a nonprofit of some sort.
All right.
I could be totally wrong with that. I saw the name of the place where she was employed. It's like, that sounds like a nonprofit. And she graduated school in 2022. So 2 full years ago, she graduated. More than 2 years ago, it was May 2022. And the way they met is that they were sitting next to each other on a plane, and she was doing homework.
Mm-hmm.
So she was doing her homework for school, which she has not been in 2 years. So apparently they didn't start dating right away, but they've at least known each other for 3 years at least.
You think a couple of years ago, Bob Kraft pulled Belichick aside, and he's like, Bill, it's too young.
I don't know that he'd be the right person to give that speech.
Okay. Way to hit that one out of the park. Exactly.
How are the massages? You know, that sort of.
I'm not going to do Bill Belichick voice and play you and I back and forth as Bob and Bill.
Good. We good conversation.
Yeah, I can't do it. You're a man of a thousand voices.
I'm in Cincinnati.
There you go. So 24 years old. Is there going to be a problem with this? I mean, I would think the McAfee show is going to be all over it. Does Belichick? Listen, if Belichick is going to do these shows, just like Brady, if you're going to do these shows, you got to have a certain amount of full disclosure. We can't have this nonsense where stuff is off the table. Will the McAfee crew push, like, hey, if we want to ask about your girlfriend every once in a while, we're going to do it?
Well, Gronk does. Gronk's made multiple references at multiple different places.
He did.
Including the Tom Brady roast, and then at the Tom Brady Hall of Fame ceremony in Foxborough, he made jokes about it. I think they'll make subtle jabs, but I don't think it'll be like, hey, tell us what it's like to date a 24-year-old. I don't think it's going to be like that.
You have an issue with this?
No.
You certainly can. You're worse than Kraft.
Of course. No, I'm not seven. I'm not in my 70s. But no.
Yeah, but you think like 32-year-olds are old.
Yeah. But at the same time. Yeah. But at the same time. I'm
He's
old,
70
right?
plus. If he wants to date someone younger, good for him. I'm still heartbroken. I thought Linda Holiday, who appeared to be in her late 50s, but trended.
She's 61.
Looked fantastic. If that's not his cup of tea, then the 24-year-old is.
And I do think because people talk about the fact that, you know, oh, there's nothing to relate to, anything like that. Like, that's who Belichick hangs out with 20-year-olds. Hangs out with 22-year-olds, 23-year-olds. That's who he hangs out with. That's who he's with all the time. That's the circle that he's in. So it's not that crazy to be like, well, this is it looks ridiculous on paper, of course. But, like, if you're like, oh, there's a New York Post piece that goes along with this from a – like a sex therapist that's like, oh, there's too much of a gap. You don't know how do you talk about anything? How do you relate to somebody? That's who he works with. It's all 20-year-olds.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, let's bring in Caleb Herring, former quarterback for the Rebels. Caleb, what's going on, buddy?
Oh, you know. Good old stuff. Summer break in full swing right now, so good stuff.
Excellent. Basketball season, I don't know if it treated you well. The Lakers didn't win. They just watched the Celtics win. Number 18, we'll break down why that just happened and why it feels like in L.A. they've got an uphill climb. But first, what did you see basketball mind on the Celtics and how they shut down, at least limited, Luka to a certain extent?
I think they did what every team says they want to do against great scorers, which that's what Luka is. He's one of the greatest scorers in the league right now, and he has a spot in the all-time list as far as scoring goes. But I think they made it hard for him, and they played a different brand of basketball than has been played really all season up until the point of the finals against Luka, which is they didn't switch screens. They picked him up full court. They wore him down. They were physical with him and made every bucket tough. Granted, he still averaged 30 points in the series, I believe. So it's not like they stopped him from scoring, but they just made everything hard. And then they had the athleticism on the other end to really attack and make it hard for everybody else to get a rhythm. It's very hard for a team to play team basketball when they're all standing and watching one guy do all the work. And for the Mavericks, that was either Kyrie or Luka trying to make a play for the rest of the guys. And I don't think against a team full of playmakers like the Celtics have, you can do that in a series. And it just got outmatched. I think that's what I saw. The Celtics had a more athletic, more team-oriented style of play, and I guess that won out in the end. And really, the big thing is the defense. I think the defense of Drew Holiday, doing what he did to Kyrie Irving, I think needs a little bit more credit than what it got. I think everybody's focusing on how bad Kyrie was. And, yeah, he didn't play his best basketball. But it had a lot to do with the fact that Drew Holiday was the primary defender on him. And this is now two finals appearances in a row where Drew Holiday has really made it difficult for one of the key playmakers on the other side. When they won with the Bucks against the Suns, he did the same thing to Chris Paul. And Chris Paul, a guy who averages under 2.5 turnovers per game on his career, averaged, I think, 5 turnovers in that series when they won. So his defense has made a huge impact in these final series, and I think that's one of the big reasons, along with Jaylen Brown's MVP performance, that the Celtics got it done.
What I guess, where do the Mavs go from here?
you really, your hands are tied. I think there's been some things floated around tied to Luka. But I think there's been some things floated around as to what pieces you can get in exchange for Kyrie, who apparently has helped his trade value. That's what people have gotten out of his season in Dallas, that his trade value is now up. And perhaps you could acquire some more suitable pieces around Luka, because I think it's clear that it's the Luka Doncic show in Dallas. And they're going to go with that as the offensive, you know, scheme. How much do you lose? So you have to go get a defensive stopper on the other end to, like, complement him on the court. And I don't think Kyrie is that. So do you surround him with athletic wing-type players? I mean, like, a guy like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, KCP, like, a guy like that can play defense on the perimeter and also knock down open threes on the other end and, you know, the pick-and-roll, stand-in-the-corner style. So I think that's what you probably try to do, is build something more suitable to what Luka does. And I don't think the answer so far in Dallas has been to complement him with another offensive guard. That's kind of what got Brunson run out of town. And I think that might end up being what gets Kyrie put out of town. But it's just a matter of what do you get in return if you decide to trade Kyrie? Can you build something else to help on the defensive side alongside with Luka? But they've got some pieces for the future. And I think Lively, being the rookie that he was this year, is going to prove to be a valuable big man in the league going forward.
On the Celtics side, how much does the narrative bother you that they basically had their path cleared by injuries to every single team in the conference?
As a Laker fan, that pisses me off. I'm absolutely pissed off about that. I don't think it takes away from the championship, because that's a part of it. That's a part of why winning a championship or losing a championship is so hard. Because sometimes the road is clear like that, and sometimes it's a lot harder. You run into a bunch of juggernauts on your road. Like I mean, the Lakers drew the number one, or, you know, the favorite at the beginning of the season, the Nuggets in the first round. So it just made it instantly harder. But in that case, it's how the field lines up, right? You can't. They still have to go out there and win the games. These are still NBA players. Granted, it's a lot easier when the other teams don't have their best players, but that's the field in front of them. So credit to them for winning. But it does suck that was the way they got their 18th championship. And this is strictly from a Lakers perspective. Like, at least make it something hard, right? Like, at least make it challenging for them, so they have to fight through obstacle after obstacle, and then they earn the 18th in a way that we can kind of respect as competitors. But it feels like, you know, the narrative, I think, as a Laker fan, is that they were handed one, and now they're going to be looked at as a favorite, even though this is only their second in the past, 40 years? That's what we're going to have to live with until next season, when the Lakers try to rebuild and have a chance to compete for one to tie it back up.
Are you one of the Laker fans that says, hey, look, they might have the most titles all time, but since the Bird-Magic duel, the Lakers are still ahead?
I wouldn't. I think I do. I will say that the 18 means something. I'm not going to try to discredit their championships, even though, you know, like 9 of them or 10 of them came before the 60s and 70s, whatever it was. It was eight team league when they won the bulk of their rings. I won't bring that up. I just brought it up. But I think there is some truth to me. Like, what have you done for me lately? And I think the NBA has been more competitive as of late. The modern era of NBA basketball has been a lot more competitive. There's been a lot more pendulum swings as far as who's been the top dog in the league. And the Lakers have had two stints, you know, since the 90s that they've been the top dog in the league. And that was the three-peat with Shaq and Kobe, and then back-to-back championships later on with Kobe. So, and then, of course, the 2020 championship with the Lakers. So throughout the span of the last two decades, the Lakers have had a bigger footprint on the NBA than the Celtics have. And that's how I would say, as a Laker fan, I get a small piece of victory. And that's not to discredit the Celtics and what they've done. They're a major franchise. Obviously, the Lakers and the Celtics occupy the two biggest sports markets, biggest markets in general in the country. So they're both going to have huge fan bases and be extremely popular for that reason. So I think either side can make an argument. But that's my stance with the Lakers. We've done more recently. So, we're better.
Caleb Herring's up on Cofield & Company. Do you want Monty Williams as the head coach of the Lakers?
I prefer him. I think Monty Williams is an outstanding coach. I think the way things ended in Phoenix, you can't help but feel. I think the way his life in general has gone, the things that he's gone through, is like, wow, that guy is somebody I could look up to, and you root for him to win. But the way things ended with him in Phoenix, what he ended up building in Phoenix before it was, like, ripped from under him, And then, you know, trying in the Pistons, he was getting paid or going to get paid, and will still get paid, apparently, because of how much he had left on his contract up there. He's proven his worth as a coach, and I think as an NBA coach, to be specific. So I think he has a resume, and he has the ability to have the ear of the locker room. He seems like a good man as well, so I root for that in him. And when you look at that compared to J.J. Redick, who is apparently the other front-runner candidate, or the front-runner candidate. I mean, Monty Williams might not even be a candidate. He just got fired this morning. So it's like, I don't know necessarily if he's even an option. But as the Laker faithful do, when things like that happen, we assume that the Lakers will be the first ones that people consider as a coaching job. Hopefully that's the case. But I would love to have Monty in L.A. I think he's a great basketball mind. I want to say there's record of LeBron James giving him the stamp of approval. So that box has been checked, right? Like, LeBron approves. So it'd be a good fit. I think it'd be a good job. I think he not only would have the ability to manage LeBron, but I think have the foresight and the ability to develop talent in the years after LeBron. Because, like I said, what he did in Phoenix and the guys that he developed there who are now moved on in their career but still lament the time they spent with him as a coach, I think he's got a track record of being able to develop as well.
So college football, did you see that former UNLV quarterback, Jaden Maiava at USC, is on the Heisman board? 50-1.
Yeah, I saw that, and I was like, that's interesting. I mean, he hasn't been declared the starter yet that I know, but still, you know, based on what he did and the special year he had at UNLV, a lot of people are saying with Power 5 talent around him, I guess is the theory, he should have an even more explosive year. And I guess that's a good theory for USC, although there's a lot of things going on in USC with people decommitting and whatnot that maybe raise your eyebrows to what they're going to be this year, especially moving into the Big Ten. They're going to be an interesting story to watch. And because of that, Maiava will have an interesting season as well. But put him on the Heisman watch, even as a dark horse, is kind of crazy. I want to see how many people are going to take that bet and if anything moves on him. But they open up the season with a tough one, I think, with LSU back in Vegas. I think it's how they open their season. So if he is the starter, that would be a crazy way for him to start the college season at USC.
UNLV quarterback situation. We had Barry Odom on last Friday. He made sure to mention Cameron Frill in the mix with Haj Malik Williams and Matthew Sluka, who's relatively new to campus, who will be dealing with that whole fire hose effect in terms of learning the offense in like less than 12 weeks. So what are you thinking right now in the quarterback sitch?
I think what you just said is going to be a big impact on that battle. I think the way the offense is going to expand in this second year of the Go-Go, I think there's a lot of returning pieces and a lot of building on what happened last year. So there's going to be a lot more information for Sluka to have to digest to get onto even playing field, even during the fall. Fortunately, another thing you talked with Coach Odom in that conversation last week was the ability now during the offseason and during the summer to have those minutes and those hours with the players that is permitted. So I don't really fully know how much of the playbook is going to be a fire hose anymore at this point when fall camp starts. I mean, it seems like they'll be a little bit more hands-on, or he'll have more time with the playbook in his hand at least, and with a coach to help him kind of figure it out as opposed to years past. But UNLV is ramping up their social media stuff as football season draws close. I think we're inside of 75 games or 75 days to Houston. And they released a graphic with all three of the quarterbacks you just mentioned that was pretty sweet. I mean, like the photo shoots have really stepped their game up at UNLV. They do a great job, and all three of those quarterbacks were featured, and all three of them equally in the competition. And Coach Odom had mentioned last year that Frio has been great as far as being ready to play, and the fact that the quarterback room last year, they felt like they could win with whoever was out there. And that included Cam Frio, who was there last year, who has experience with the playbook. He's the most experienced of the quarterbacks in the competition this year. So we'll see if that pays him dividends. But I'm excited to see who comes out as the top dog in the quarterback room. As always, that's a point of emphasis for UNLV. Quarterback play is key. And whoever can take the mantle, I know with this coaching staff, will have earned it. And I know will give them the best chance to win. And I'm excited to see what happens, especially with the two transfers in. Their electricity with the ball in their hands is something that UNLV hasn't had at quarterback in quite some time. So we'll see if it comes to fruition, which one of them takes the helm. He's taking the starting snaps at Houston.
One of the oldest truisms in football is if you have two quarterbacks, or three in this case, you have zero. Why is it different?
Yeah.
Why is this different?
I don't think it's different. That would be my stance as well. And my position is that of the three good quarterbacks you have, one needs to separate themselves. And I've listened to Coach Odom talk, and I've listened to Coach Marion talk about the same kind of topic. And I think ideally they would want someone to separate and say, no, you are all good and you are all capable of getting the job done on the field, but I'm the guy. And doing that through their play, not just through talking, obviously, but through their play and their reps on the field, the trust that they earn in game time reps, I think it's ideal for one to separate themselves. Now, you can win with three quarterbacks, but it's a lot easier when you define who the best guy in the room is, and there's not this constant controversy or conflict over this guy's good too. He's better in this situation, and he's not. He's more efficient on third downs. He's, you know, more effective at run checks or whatever the case may be. You'd prefer one of your guys to separate. No, I'm the guy. Give me the reps. And I think there's hints and clues. Good coaches will see them and say, you know, this is my guy. And hopefully one of these quarterbacks ends up separating themselves during fall camp and it doesn't go into the season with a competition.
I know I'm asking you to talk about something you're not watching every day, but I think that you can have some insight if I give you some scenarios. The Raiders quarterback competition, both guys have been, let's just say, not good. It's been rough to watch practice out there. Now, I think you can explain it by defense is usually ahead of the offense at this time of year. The defense for the Raiders in particular is a unit that's all coming back, that's all under the same coach that they were last year. You would expect the defense would be far ahead of the offense at this point of camp, right? I think that's fair. But even knowing all those things, you're watching practice like, oh, my gosh, like, what is that? How much should we expect the defense to be completely dominating the offense right now?
I think you can expect it, and this is true in every camp or in every situation where there's installation and, you know, the start of things are going on. The defense will be ahead, and I've said that for years.
Hey, Caleb, we got a minute left.
Yeah, I'll get it. I was looking at the time. I was like, I know we got to go to Reno soon. But you look at the process of decision-making of your offense. Are we getting to the right spot, and then the defense is just beating us there? Is my quarterback processing the read the right way, and maybe the pass just gets deflected or there's just a defense on every play? You can see those things watching the film. How much is my quarterback's eyes darting around the field searching for the answer, and how much does he know, okay, the defense just won this rep, I can throw it away or whatever the case may be, or maybe I'll try to force it just to get the rep. You can kind of filter what that is in practice, but the defense is always going to be ahead, and there's a certain point in every football camp where you have to just weather that storm offensively and say, you know what? We're doing the right things. We're making the right plays. We're in the right play. The defense just has a step ahead of us, and that's sometimes a hard knock for camp. No pun intended.
Caleb, we appreciate it, dude. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Take care.
There he is, one of the voices of Rebel Football, co-host of the Barry Odom Radio Show, Caleb Herring, former quarterback for the Rebels. We have brought back the summer of fun. It's brought to you by Planet Nissan. 8 trips going out over the next 8 weeks. To get in, you got to text. Easy. All you got to do is text. 702-364-1100, text 702-364-1100, code word is FLY, FLY, FLY.